Explore the tropics at Whole Foods Market through April 16th. Save on juicy finds like yellow mangoes at 5 for $5 with Prime. Sweet Dacopan citrus is back, just $3.49 per pound with Prime. Plus, save on seasonal favorites like dragon fruit, kiwi, pineapple, and more. In the meat department, pick up animal welfare certified meats with tropical-inspired marinades. And be sure to try the spicy Hawaiian pizza, back for a limited time. Only at Whole Foods Market.
You know you've got a comeback in you. When you take the next step, you're going to make it count. For your career, for your family, for your life. You can earn a degree you're proud of with Purdue Global. Purdue Global is backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected and innovative public universities. This is your chance. This is your opportunity. This is your comeback. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Let's clear out winter and clean up the lawn with Spring Black Friday savings at the Home Depot. Right now, get the Ryobi One Plus leaf blower for just $89 and make your lawn work easier with a powerful 90 miles an hour of clearing power. And with convenient online shopping, you can order on the app, pick up in store, and get outside sooner. Get your yard spring ready with the Ryobi One Plus leaf blower, now just $89 during Spring Black Friday at the Home Depot. How doers get more done.
Hello.
Hi.
It's us.
You're about to hear an episode on Independence Day.
With Lindsay Ellis, the one, the only. But first, a few plugs.
Oh, yes.
We have a few shows coming up in multiple countries, multiple continents. First, we have our last LA show for a while at the Ruby on July 13th. We're covering Anastasia for my birthday. I'll be cosplaying as Rasputin, of course. that's on July 13th. Go to BechdelCast.com. Click on live for tickets there. I'm also doing my show one more time on July 20th at the Lyric Hyperion, Boss Who Miss Girl, if you want to check that out before we leave the country to go to London and Edinburgh.
So yeah, you're doing your show, Boss Who Miss Girl,
July 27th and July 28th at the Bill Murray. Tickets are already running low.
That's in London.
It's the show I'm taking to Edinburgh Fringe Fest called Boss Who Miss Girl. It is a skewering satire of corporate feminism in the vein of Sheryl Sandberg, Elizabeth Holmes, etc.
It's a fun show. It is very fun. I've seen it many times.
Too
many times. And I'm going to see it more when we are both in Edinburgh.
Yeah, I'll then be doing the show every single night at Edinburgh Fringe Festival at the Pleasance Baby Grand from July 31st to August 26th. Tickets for that are also on the Bechdelcast website or on my website. I will be selling tickets at any cost. And then after that run ends, we will be going to
London
for an evening of two live Bechdel casts.
That exciting.
I'm really excited. It's our first international performance.
Yes.
Sorry, Canada.
So we'll be there soon, Canada. Don't you worry. But first, we'll be in London on September 1st.
Yes.
Two back-to-back shows that evening. Mm-hmm. We are covering Pixar's Brave and The Favourite.
So hopefully that's appropriate when you'll enjoy it. We know that Brave does not take place in London.
But we've already done Paddington, so
with that, and we're pretty sure that's the only, listen, we're not covering the King's Speech. You don't want to hear it. We don't want to do it. So we'll be at the Albany. Tickets are officially on sale. They can be found at Bechdelcast.com in the live tab. And we hope to see you there.
And then don't forget, I'm doing a couple stand-up shows in Edinburgh as well in late August. I'm doing some in London and I'm doing some in Dublin as well. So if you live in those parts, please check me out. All my stuff will be on my website, CaitlinDrante.com.
Love it.
So without much further ado, happy Independence Day episode.
Yes.
On the Bechdelcast, the questions asked if movies have women in them. Are all their discussions just boyfriends and husbands, or do they have individualism? The patriarchy's effing vast. Start changing it with the Bechdelcast.
Good morning. In less than an hour and a half, we will have finished talking about the movie Independence Day.
Oh, no.
And many from around the world will have listened to it. Mm-hmm. And
we can't be consumed by our petty differences anymore.
Caitlin, you are such an inspiring leader. Really, this is why you keep getting reelected.
We will be fighting for our freedom from the patriarchy.
Mm-hmm.
Should we win? Today will no longer be considered an American holiday, but a day that we were declared in one voice.
I'm like in the crowd, high on meth, ready to tear my shirt off at any moment.
Oh, so you're Randy Quaid?
Yes.
We will not go quietly into the night.
Ah!
We will not vanish without a fight. We're going to live on. We're going to survive.
This is really...
Today, we celebrate the Bechdelcast. Welcome to it.
Oh, gosh. I have so many twists and turns. I really nominate this one for something, anything.
Thank you. You told me I could do the intro, and that's and what really, I thought would be the best choice.
I was just going to be like, I got dental surgery. My mouth hurts.
Mine does, too.
I know. It's kind of fun. I feel like that's our version of a glow up, is that we are getting our serious dental problems taken care of.
Yes.
You know, 3 years of work, and we're finally able to see a dentist.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, mine, to be fair, mine is a Groupon dentist.
Sure.
But she was very nice, and she did all the procedures at once, and I feel like my skull is on fire.
Oh, my goodness. I'm so sorry.
No, it's good.
Anyway.
It's a healthy good.
I'm Caitlin Durante.
I'm Jamie Loftus.
And we talk about movies.
Mm-hmm. With our perfect teeth.
With our now perfect teeth.
Mm-hmm.
So this episode will be flawless.
Yes. It's not like Bruckheimer flawless. We don't have veneers, gigantic veneers protruding 3 inches out of our head.
Right. We examine movies through the lens of how they treat and represent women. We use the Bechdel test as a jumping off point.
Yes.
And that, of course, is
the metric invented by cartoonist Alison Bechdel. That is a test applied to media. For our purposes, it means that there has to be a scene in a movie that has two female identifying characters with names who talk about something other than a man for 2 lines of dialogue.
Doesn't sound hard.
But etc.
Yeah.
I'm assuming this isn't your first episode. If it is, you know, you can find that in a different episode.
Yes. So today we're talking about Independence Day.
Yeah.
And today, the day this episode comes out, is also Independence Day.
The actual day?
Yeah.
Oh, amazing.
Yes.
Wow.
We're recording it, perhaps not on Independence Day.
Celebrating Independence Day is like weird now.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's like some people that I don't even remember what I did. I think I was with you last year, but there were some people who were like being real irony bros about it. I'm like, well, I hate that worse than celebrating it sincerely. I don't know. What a strange time to be alive.
It certainly is.
Yeah.
And hey, let's introduce our guest.
Yes. I'm so excited.
She's a video essayist. She's an author. And you remember her from our Phantom of the Opera episode.
Passions were flared.
Oh my goodness. It's Lindsay Ellis.
Hey, thank you for having me to talk about the best movie.
Yeah.
In all of the history.
a cinematic masterpiece.
Might be the best piece of art.
I mean, mm-hmm. Yes. Oh. It is. It's a feminist text. It's a piece of art.
It's a scholarly text.
Yeah.
So we are talking about Independence Day. Lindsay, what is your history relationship with this movie?
That's a good question. I feel like it's very like baked into the fabric of my DNA. Mm. Like it just like fused with me the moment it came out. And we've been one ever since. And
okay.
You know, like when you mention the author part, like when my book comes out next year, you're going to be like, oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah, that tracks. It was kind of one of those movies of the 90s where like, because for the most part, I don't really experience nostalgia.
Mm-hmm.
I'm actually a deeply cynical person.
Sure.
But I think like Independence Day is just like where every piece of nostalgia of my brain is funneled because it's such a deeply stupid movie. But I also argue, I feel like Independence Day raises a very interesting philosophical question, which is, can a stupid movie be good?
Uh-huh.
And I think we're going to talk about that today.
Certainly.
Yeah. I think yes.
Yeah. Jamie, what's your history?
I don't have a ton of history with this movie. I do remember that for some reason it was the our first DVDs in my home were this and Holes.
Okay.
This was for a very long time the only two DVDs I had. I loved Holes and my parents loved Independence Day, and that was simply the way it was.
Okay.
And those were the two DVDs. So I have seen, I had seen this movie, I hadn't seen it in like years, but in my head I'm like, oh, that's what my mom and dad would watch right after I finished watching Holes.
So, they're like, it's our turn with the DVD player, Jamie.
Yes, just a really, a lot of draconian battles over the DVD mm-hmm. player. So yeah, this is for me mostly the movie that would come on after Holes.
Got it.
Okay. What about you?
This came out when I was 10, and I believe I saw it in a drive-in movie theater at age 10. And then I did not watch it again after that, ever.
Oh, did you like it? Do you remember liking it?
I remember liking it, but then Men in Black came out next year, and I was like, I like this Will Smith alien movie way better than Independence Day, so Men in Black was my shit.
I think Men in Black was my Will Smith entry point. That was probably the first time I'd ever, like, seen him.
Sure.
Independence Day was definitely my Will Smith gateway drug, but Men in Black Will Smith was, like, my Will Smith heroin. Like, that was the one I really developed a problem for.
Yeah.
It was just sort of that 1-2 punch, which is funny because, like, Will Smith would talk about how he didn't want to be known as the alien guy.
Yeah.
But, like, arguably his two most influential movies are different takes, like, very different takes on, you know, conspiracy theory. Americana, and it's funny because neither of these films can decide if the deep state is bad or not. They're like, I guess the deep state's there. Mm-hmm. It's doing its best.
It's too vague. Yeah.
They're trying.
Slap some cute faces on the deep state. See how we feel about
it. They got Brent Spiner.
Yeah.
He's real excited about the lights.
Brent Spiner, who I was like, oh my god, it's the villain from The Master of Disguise.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Well, that is a deep cut.
He is Data on Star Trek, which is how I think most people know him.
Or that. Really?
Did not know that.
Beloved Broadway actor, Brent Spiner.
Good, character actor.
I did see Independence Day. Is it Resurgence or whatever the sequel from 2016? Yeah, I saw
Although
that in
I
theaters.
I have a different love for that one because it's so ambitious and, like, just so out of time, because I did a video about this, which I'm sure we're going to kind of at least touch on, which is how Independence Day is a movie that could only exist in the 90s.
Yes.
And then when you have the sequel that just does not make any sense in like a post 9/11 Alex Jones world, and so the movie they made was just like, well, I guess we're going to invade them.
Right.
Isn't for the new one, it's basically everyone is back except for Will Smith.
Yeah.
Like most people.
Oh. Except for they recast the president's daughter, which is kind of bewildering because Mae Whitman is an actual star.
Working actor,
they recast her with a hot nobody. Roland Emmerich went her and then recast her.
Okay, I'll just jump into the recap and then we'll go from there.
Yeah, let's roll. This movie is also famously 2.5 hours long.
It is
so
real long.
Right, that's nothing compared to the norm today.
That's true. I mean, but for a first movie, I don't know,
that's like a short Marvel movie.
Very long. Yeah. That's true.
Yeah, so it's July 2nd. Act one. They tell you exactly where the act breaks are in this movie.
It's kind of a masterclass in that way.
I should teach a class on this movie.
You should.
Screenwriting with Roland.
So an extraterrestrial radio signal comes in and everyone's freaking out. Jeff Goldblum is there. He's a science guy. Still not entirely sure what his specific job is.
Well, he's a science guy in a lot of
things.
He's a cable repairman, as his dad jokes.
Yeah, and that's, I think that's not quite accurate. I think he's a technician at a cable company.
Got it.
Only to become a hacker later on.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, it makes sense. He knows the fiber.
It's true.
He's got a Mac. They use the same OS.
Oh, I love the vague techno jargon used in this movie. Oh. He's like, I put a virus into the aliens and they're screwed. And everyone's like, oh my God.
Another thing that only works in 96. Like,
yeah. Like people will see the movie Hackers and they're like, sure.
Yeah, exactly.
Hackers, my favorite part of Hackers is that a lot of the cast is wearing crew neck sweatshirts that say VCR on it. Like, it's just like,
I just love the like green ones and zeros that like
they're like, this is like technology.
Fade in and fade
this
out
is, as
they
is like coding
fuse their consciousness with the computer, because that's how hacking
yeah
absolutely how it works.
be.
Okay, so Randy Quaid is drunk. He's dusting crops. So
it's Tuesday.
Yep.
Yeah. Then we meet
really playing the time.
Then we meet the president of the United States, played by Bill Pullman. It's President Thomas Whitmore. And no one's taking him seriously because they think he's too young and that he's a wimp.
Oh, my gosh. I love that his central issue is like, I'm too hot. No one will take me seriously.
Oh, there is a lore behind that. Like, apparently, like in earlier scripts, it was like there was like a whole thing about how he tried to introduce universal health care because it was like they're very obviously. Yeah, yeah. They're very obviously like if you go into the Independence Day wiki, which I never have, like there's like a whole backstory about how like. He tried to introduce universal health care and it failed, and then the Republicans regained control of Congress, and that's why his approval ratings have crashed.
Interesting.
Whoa. I mean, that would be less dumb than I'm too hot and no one
I'm just too charismatic.
They couldn't fit that backstory in, so they're just like, he's just too.
It's not even in the director's cut.
Too many alien punches to fit in. Yeah. There's only so much time.
Exactly.
So he's too hot to be president.
So he's too hot. And then his press secretary, Connie, is relaying a lot of this information to him. She's just like, no one thinks you're cool. Then it turns out the signal that's coming in is from this enormous alien mothership that's approaching Earth. And then several huge spacecrafts break off from the mothership and then like head towards Moscow, New York City, D.C., some other major cities around the world. I mean, they just like hover over those cities for a while. They're just hanging out.
Mm-hmm.
The president's like, I don't care. I'm staying in D.C., okay?
It's like they're ominously hovering over like all these major cities. It's probably fine.
And then canonically, this movie is taking place in 1996,
yes.
Right?
Yes.
So it is also a few months before the election, right?
Right.
Oh, yeah.
It was never an election year.
I've thought a lot about this movie. No one mentions that
there's an election coming up. So if you're hot president and people are already like, he's too hot, I was like, oh, they would say pretty boy ran away from conflict. Ah. Hot man must be strong.
Yeah.
Come up for re-election, Connie. Yeah. I got to stand my ground.
I got to be sexy and here.
So then we finally meet Will Smith, the genie himself. We finally meet his character, which is Steve Hiller, 20 minutes into the movie.
Mm-hmm. They really make you wait.
They make you wait. He is military. He has to report to his base to deal with these alien spaceships. He thinks there's no danger, but his girlfriend, Jasmine, is like, I don't feel good about this.
There is something about seeing Vivica A. Fox in a one-floor house that made me want it to be the beginning of Kill Bill.
Yeah.
Right? She's had better scenes in a one-floor house.
Indeed. So back in New York, Jeff Goldblum, he figures out that the signal that they received was actually a countdown that all the spaceships are using. And then when they get to zero, they're going to attack. So he and his dad, played by Judd Hirsch.
They only attack planets with satellites. Like, the satellite system already installed.
I love an arbitrary countdown in a movie. It's
like stealing your,
figured it out.
It's like when you steal your neighbor's Wi-Fi. That's just what these aliens are doing.
Exactly.
With the satellites.
That's why they went for the inhabited planet.
Literally,
they needed their sound.
Yeah.
It's like their version of like, it's only 3 days until the talent show.
So then Jeff Goldblum's character, his name is David, and his dad, played by Judd Hirsch, they drive to D.C. to tell the president. But before like really anything can be done about this countdown news, the aliens start blowing shit up, including the iconic White House explosion scene.
Yes.
So then the president and his staff, they get to safety, and then Jasmine and her son Dylan get to safety, but a bunch of other people die. Now we're in July 3rd, a.k.a. Act 2. Will Smith and his Marine buds go in for a counterattack against the aliens, but the alien ship has this force field, and they're fighting back in their own little, like, fighter ships, and Will Smith is the only survivor of the Marines in this counterattack, so
love
he
that.
Goes over. Right, he goes over to an alien ship that he took down, and then punches an alien in the face.
Welcome to Earth.
And then he starts dragging this alien back to his base. Meanwhile, in the LA area, Jasmine finds the first lady in some rubble.
Yeah.
Hillary Clinton herself in a pile of dirt.
Red-headed yes. Hillary.
That actor plays the president in Battlestar Galactica. So she goes from first lady to president.
Wow, level up.
The thing that didn't happen in real life.
The thing that did not happen to Hillary Clinton.
That's unrealistic.
I mean, at least Hillary Clinton doesn't die of internal bleeding. So there's that.
True.
Yet. Yeah.
She still got time. Aliens might arrive tomorrow. She might be in a helicopter.
Yes. So then Randy Quaid, who is again in this movie for some reason.
And also is so important. He only becomes more important as the movie continues. Yeah.
Which is wild. But he is with his kids somewhere outside of LA. They're in a desert. He keeps talking about how aliens had abducted him 10 years ago.
This is really very Randy Quaid. Mm-hmm. Like, mm-hmm. And Randy Quaid may not have even known it at this time.
Yeah, I don't think Randy Quaid knew this was fiction. I think he thought he was making a documentary. And he was just testifying his personal experience.
Every line of his is improvised.
There was a lot more. Like, I think the director's cut in the script, there was a lot more rape jokes. Did the aliens rape you, Russ? Boy, you sure did get raped by those aliens.
There's already so much of that.
Yeah. There's already quite a bit.
Yeah, there's these, like, guys who are bullying him. And they're, like, laughing about it. Did they do sexual stuff to you?
And it's what an odd place to go.
So Randy Quaid picks up Will Smith and the alien that he's dragging around and who he had punched in the face. He picks him up in the desert, and then the president and his friends are taken to Area 51 because there's an alien research facility there. And that's also where Will Smith and Randy Quaid go. And then the scientists at Area 51 start to dissect Will Smith's alien, but it's still alive. And
an alien less vaginal than your average movie alien.
Yeah. True.
But still pretty vaginal.
It does. Not unvaginal.
They slice it open, and then it, like, falls open into these, like,
pretty
flaps.
Yeah.
It gives a big flap.
Yeah.
There's a scalpulin.
I feel like it's somewhere in the middle of, like, from not vaginal at all to, like, which one is, like Stranger Things
face
season
hugger.
One,
oh,
like,
yeah, yeah.
Erupting pussy monster.
Sure.
And then, which I'm going to confuse it, alien or aliens, one of them has, or maybe both. Have
the pods,
like the facehuggers
that flip open. Yeah,
the facehuggers are pretty veggie.
Yeah. So this semi vagina alien is still alive.
We'll release our rankings at a later time.
Yeah, we should go to the Wikipedia page for like vaginal inspired alien design. There's a video. That'll be my one for July.
Yeah. Some of them get really like goopy too. And then you're like, this has gone too far. Like you have not.
It's the second Pirates of the Caribbean movie, but the Kraken shows up, is like a vagina monster to end all vagina
monsters.
Well,
it just makes me wonder about like alien metabolism, that they are always covered in goo. Like, even like the Independence Day aliens, they are always kind of have that like low level sheen going on.
Yeah.
And it's just like, maybe they're just sweating.
Maybe they're very sweaty.
Look like Glossier models. Like, they just look kind of wet.
Yeah. Just always kind of wet. Because it's not quite scaly. It's moist. There's a moisture going on.
Need a towel off.
Yeah. Definitely. So this alien uses its telepathic abilities to communicate through this guy, Dr. Oaken, which is Brent Spiner's character. And the president's like, hey, why don't we just like try to coexist peacefully? And the alien's like, no, I want you to die.
That's my favorite scene where he's like, can we find a way to coexist? And then the alien just goes, no.
And then they're kind of like, well, it was worth asking.
Yeah, he's like, hey, I tried. And then he doesn't even go, why?
Yeah.
He's just like, okay, he said no.
Okay.
Some real diplomacy 101.
Yeah, President Hottie.
Right. Yep.
So, yeah, then Jeff Goldblum is like, no, we can't use nuclear weapons against them. This is a horrible idea. And he's right. They try. It doesn't work because the shields are still up on the alien spaceship. So then Will Smith borrows a helicopter and somehow knows exactly where to go to find
his girlfriend.
Well,
he went to El Toro.
But why would he think she was there? Because
they agreed to meet there.
Oh, did they? Okay,
yeah,
I missed that part.
Yeah, because like whenever he leaves, he's like, come to me at the base after you go stripping.
Right.
And she's like, okay. And so that's where she's trying to get the whole movie, is trying to get to the base. And then when she gets there, it's been destroyed by the alien pod fighters.
Got it. So they meet up and they're like, oh my God.
There's a great kiss.
There's a kiss. And then
it's backlit.
It's beautiful.
The president is reunited with his wife, but she's bleeding eternally, and then she dies.
Oops.
It is now July 4th, Act 3, baby.
Everyone's at their lowest point. Looks hopeless.
Yes.
Those alien shields are pretty impenetrable.
Come down.
Those are impenetrable, you guys. What are we going to do?
We arbitrarily killed one of the women. Right. We're all at a low.
Yeah. Exactly.
The music swelled. It was very emotional.
It was.
Yeah.
And then Jeff Goldblum, he's throwing a fit. And his dad's like, hey, get off this freezing floor before you catch a cold. And Jeff Goldblum's like, oh, that's it. We have to give the alien ship a computer virus.
And then like zeros and ones begin to rain into the screen like a screensaver.
My favorite part of this scene is he is drunk. Like he is lit when he comes up with the computer virus idea. And I like to like my headcanon of this scene because like the whole thing like happens over the course of like 4 hours. Mm. So you don't sober up after 4 hours.
Right.
So like he comes up with this idea while he's wasted. He pitches it while he's still drunk. He's still drunk when he gets in the craft with Will Smith. And it's only that whenever he goes, oh, what was I thinking? That he has sobered up.
Sure.
My headcanon.
And he's like about to throw up, and it's like, sure, he gets like air sickness, but it's also because
he's been drinking a lot the whole movie.
So then they figure out that they're going to fly this small alien ship that they have into space to the mothership and infect it with the virus. Which will cause all the shields to like retract. And then Will Smith is like, I'll do it. They organize the attack. They gather up all the pilots they can, including Randy Quaid, by just asking like, hey, does anyone here know how to fly?
And he's like,
no. Oh, but the best part of that scene is the contrivance for why they have enough planes but not enough pilots. Because there's like a newscast where they're like, yeah, a bunch of military people are hiding in the mountains because they're scared.
I missed that.
Yeah, that's the explanation. It's just like our brave troops are actually quite cowardly when push comes to shove.
Anyways, we'll deal with them later. Honestly, most of the third act, like the logic behind every decision, was very cryptic to me.
Well, that's why I'm here.
Yeah.
I'm here to explain. Because, like, it's one of those really pedantic movies where every time you're like, but why did thing? It's like, there was a throwaway line.
There was a throwaway line. Because I was like, as I was watching it and you know, I mean, it's like you barely have to, like, I'm glad that you're able to follow if you're really paying attention, but you barely have to be able to follow. You're just like, it's going to happen. Mm-hmm. So someone's going to fly into the spaceship and then someone's going to kiss and then it's over.
Yeah.
It's going to be great.
The two things that need to happen in this movie.
Yeah.
And alien corpse parts will fall from the sky and the music will swell. And
and Bill Pullman's on the ground, like, seemingly forgetting that his wife died less than 24 hours
ago. He's feeling pretty good. He's got his cigar.
Woo-hoo. So many people die. And then he's the people thrilled. Who should react to that do not react to that.
Yeah, yeah. Like the next day, the first scene of Act 2, July 3rd, is like Will Smith and friends like getting cigars and like, woo, ready to whoop E.T.'s ass. And it's like, Jasmine is presumed dead.
Yeah.
As is pretty much the entire population of L.A. County. I assume you have family, sir.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. No one cares. And then when Randy Quaid dies, his son is just like, I'm so proud of him.
Yeah,
it's like are you crying? What... Like, why don't...
I mean at least that was a complicated relationship between father and son.
Yeah, because like most of the director's cut is like extension of the Randy Quaid plot, and it's like convoluted and like, well, because like he, like the son is actually his stepson because Randy Quaid married his mother, so the brother's actually a half-brother, but I think the oldest is just like the only stepson,
okay.
And the mother died at some point. I'm pretty sure she's Native American, and so that's like a whole thing.
What a strange amount of detail to apply to that character.
And then like the middle child has like a medical condition, and they spend like a long time trying to find meds for this kid.
Yeah.
And it It was so agonizingly long.
Lot of that stays. I mean, like, Sick Kid is still there. Yeah. And you're
he does puke.
He does puke. He's definitely sick. I'm like, I don't... Are we... Who is he? Like, whenever those kids... I know that they're, like, Randy Quaid's... It's just weird how much this movie is just, like, people love Randy Quaid, and and they're going to root for him no matter
the
what.
The focus groups say more Quaid.
Yeah.
And yet there's no time to develop any of the female characters. Wild.
No. You don't want to die a virgin, right?
Like that whole... I can't wait to talk about that. So then Bill Pullman gives his famous speech. Will Smith and Jeff Goldblum fly off into space. They go. They upload the virus to the mothership.
Also, they're friends now.
They're best friends. The pilots fire at Will at the spacecrafts on Earth. Randy Quaid sacrifices himself to save everyone. And then
the boys
come back from space and they get
yep,
some kisses.
Lady motherfuckers are here.
The lady folks run into their arms and they hear some kissing.
Beautiful salt flat.
Yes. And then that is the movie. We've got to take a quick break, but we'll come right back.
As we wave goodbye to winter's chill, it's time to give our lawn a little love and embrace the freshness of spring. And guess what? The Home Depot's Spring Black Friday sale is here to make it all a breeze. Snag the Ryobi One Plus leaf blower for just $89 and say goodbye to tedious yard work. With a powerful 90 miles an hour of clearing power, your lawn will look spotless in a flash. And the best part? Thanks to the convenience of online shopping, you can effortlessly place your order via the app, cruise into the store for pickup, and find yourself chilling in your freshly spruced up yard in no time. Don't let this awesome deal blow away. Get your hands on the Ryobi One Plus leaf blower for only $89. Yeah, just $89. Exclusively during Spring Black Friday at the Home Depot. How doers get more done.
Are you on the hunt for a new home this spring, but don't know where to start? Fisher Homes is your solution. Your new home should reflect you from the front door to the kitchen and even your outdoor space. Start your journey by selecting your ideal home site, like in a cul-de-sac or that's tree-lined, and then choose from a variety of expertly designed floor plans. Bring it all together at our Lifestyle Design Center. Let Fisher Homes be your new home solution this spring and start making memories at fisherhomes.com.
Spectrum One is a big deal. You get Spectrum Internet with the most reliable internet speeds, free advanced Wi-Fi for enhanced security and privacy, and a free Spectrum Mobile Unlimited line with nationwide 5G included, all while saving big. For the big speed, big reliability, and big savings you want, get Spectrum One. Just $49.99 a month for 12 months. Visit spectrum.com/bigdeal for full details. Offer subject to change. Valid for qualified residential customers only. Service not available in all areas. Restrictions apply.
And we're back.
Oh, man.
Okay.
Where to begin?
Well, so, Lindsay, you did a video essay on Independence Day versus War of the Worlds. Mm-hmm. And we're kind of just interested on your take on how this movie, Independence Day, can kind of only exist in the time frame that it came out in. And just give us a recap, so to speak, of your video, if you wouldn't mind.
Well, it's interesting because to jump onto another 90s classic, The Matrix. Mm. I remember when that movie came out, and part of the whole premise of The Matrix is that, like, 1997 was the peak of human civilization before it started declining. And I remember at the time thinking, that's ridiculous. And in hindsight, I'm like, oh. I think there might have been something to that, because the 90s was a weird kind of uniquely stable time in world history. And I feel like when I put that out, people are like, oh, but this thing, but this other thing. It's like, well, in the grand scheme,
right?
You know, mm-hmm. like it was between the Berlin Wall goes down and 9/11. Mm-hmm. And so a result is that the media is kind of bored and really drawn to disaster.
Yeah.
And so Independence Day kind of fits in, like, sort of a Venn diagram of, like, fascination with aliens that was very, or rather specifically, like, aliens and, American conspiracy theory. Mm-hmm. Like, the three biggest examples of that being The X-Files, Independence Day, and Men in Black.
Mm-hmm.
And it also kind of falls under disaster movies, which neither X-Files or Men in Black are. So it's, like, two of the biggest, like, genres, dated genres of the 90s. Uh-huh. And both of those things died when 9/11 happened, uh-huh, because suddenly conspiracy theories weren't so cute and fun anymore. And also nobody wanted to watch disaster movies.
Right.
It's kind of interesting now in how it's like swung way the other way. Like all the disasters you see on movies and I guess now on television, Game of Thrones, are like they love their 9/11-y imagery. Uh-huh. So I think it takes an approach that audiences were, of course, totally down with at the time, because it didn't really take this idea of international disaster seriously. It's such a fun movie, like you said. Mm-hmm. Everyone kind of reacts to this horrible disaster with, like, ready to kick the tires and light the fires, Big Daddy.
Oh, Harry Connick Jr. drives me fucking crazy in this movie.
Does he crazy with love? Crazy with desire?
That was supposed to be Matthew Perry originally.
Whoa. Yeah. Well, I didn't know that.
He was cast, and then, I don't know.
He's like, I gotta go be a friend some more.
I gotta go be worst character on Friend.
instead of the worst character in Independence.
Matthew Perry is almost always the worst part, and I like him, but he's the worst part of 17 again.
Oh,
he's
sure.
The worst part of a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
And that's why we love him.
He's the worst part of the movies that star him.
Yeah.
Like the whole nine yards.
There's, he was on that show that was called Go On, but it was stylized, so it looked like the name of the show was Goon, and then it got canceled after 3 episodes. That's one of my favorite Matthew Perry failures.
Oh, sure, 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 sure.
That's a whole other podcast.
So there's an...
Super producer Sophie is cracking up on this episode.
She likes the Matthew Perry shade.
Call it Perry's pitfalls.
Yeah. Anyway, coming Lindsay, go on.
So when we do a sociological study of the there's an interesting sort of trend going on right now that is kind of in its twilight. But this is true of like any 20-year cycle, because, you know, it's like you'll have 20-year cycles that appeal to certain age groups and 30-year cycles that appeal to others. So that's why there's like an interesting sort of like parallel right now with 90s nostalgia and remakes, mm-hmm, and 80s nostalgia and aesthetic. Like, I think the two biggest for 80s nostalgia right now are It, the It franchise,
oh, yes,
mm-hmm, and Stranger Things. Mm-hmm. But with 90s nostalgia, it'll be like remakes or reboots of 90s things. And boy, do the ones like, see, Men in Black International is coming out, like, mm-hmm, or came out already. That was a movie that happened.
And we loved it.
We sure did see it. Independence Day Resurgent came out in 2016. And the X-Files reboot was also a thing that happened.
Yeah.
But I wish we could talk about Men in Black International and how it did if we had the time.
Oh, shoot. We just simply don't.
It's interesting that, like, you know, Independence Day Resurgence, it was too different from the old one because it couldn't piggyback off of the, you know, conspiracy theory Americana that it was written around. And X-Files didn't know what to do, mm-hmm, with the way conspiracy theories are now a part of the culture and how, you know, and both movies are extremely naive, I would honestly say, borderline irresponsible, mm-hmm, especially the X-Files. Because Roland Emmerich has this really interesting preoccupation with conspiracy theory, because I genuinely think he doesn't believe it. Huh. But I don't think he understands that a lot of people do.
Yeah.
So it's interesting, sort of like as a study, like an anthropological case study of a time,
sure,
in history that, you know, is just, we can't ever go back.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of the movies we cover on the podcast, we, you know, talk about how they are very much a product of the time that they come out in, because, you know, they will be just ripe with homophobia, sexism, mm-hmm, all manner of problematic things that, you know, we in 2019 are like, oh my God, how was that ever okay? And not that it ever was, but, you know, culturally, we were in a different space 10 years ago, 20 years ago, on and on.
Yeah.
But yes, this movie is kind of a product of its time in a different way than we normally discuss. But there are still some things
plenty to talk. I mean, yeah, it is like, it's weird. Like, it was like genuinely jarring, as much as I enjoyed this movie, but it's like a little bit jarring in some way to see a disaster movie with such like an optimistic tilt. Mm-hmm. Like you don't really ever, like there are moments, but you don't really ever see anyone on Earth consider that they will lose.
Right. Well, I mean, that's part of the, just this American-ness, because it's an American story filtered through the lens of a German who mm-hmm. was raised very wealthy. So he is the essence of privilege, which is interesting because like Roland Emmerich was at the time pretty much the only out gay director. Like Bryan Singer mm-hmm. wasn't out yet. And plus he wasn't really famous yet because, I guess Usual Suspects had just come out. Double check that. Yeah. But it's like going through that filter is very interesting because I don't know if an American would be shameless enough to make a movie like this, but Americans really reacted to it positively.
Mm-hmm. I mean,
in a way that like Roland was never able to recapture that level of success, even though he's basically been grandfathered into you can make whatever movie you want until right. now. Mm-hmm. I think he's finally lost that.
But it is like the perfect moment of just like USA, USA. There's so many moments here that I feel like you could show that same clip and put it in a movie from 2019 and it would be like a jokey thing mm-hmm. or a sinister thing
yeah.
to see someone like a group of mostly white dudes going like USA, mm-hmm. USA. That's scary to people now.
Yeah. Right.
1996, they're like, no, this is Whee! Like the peak of the movie.
Or it would be a very different, for a different crowd. Like I could see yeah. a really conservative tilting movie do that. But
for
I think
sure.
like this movie, because like, you know, Roland is liberal, Hollywood liberal, but like I think that this movie is made for Democrats. Let's put it that way. Like, it's a movie for Democrats.
Yeah, they got the Clintons in office.
Yeah, yeah.
Basically,
they don't like him because he's too hot.
He's too cool. He all
he's
but
too
like
cool.
He plays a saxophone too much.
I was gonna say he all but pulled out.
He
a
was
saxophone.
On Arsenio Hall too many times.
But this movie was $75 million budget, $817 million
Ooh,
box office. Like,
baby.
Because it's
was.
Great.
Yeah, it was very successful.
It was the number, I think it was the number one movie of the year it came
out. The year?
It was one or two.
Check.
Doesn't surprise me.
Also, just a stray observation about disaster movies. Before 9/11, they're orange. After 9/11, they're blue.
Yeah, they're very gray.
Yeah.
Because again, like with Game of Thrones as an example, where we got like 29/11s, that color palette never let up.
No,
until the threat was stabbed.
It's exhausting. Yeah,
but yeah, it's just like I think there is something about just like the suppressive blue palette, like the sort of blue-gray that before 9/11 was mostly associated with, like, you know, Holocaust movies.
Sure.
And even after 9/11, like, there was something just like this very, like, Russian work camp prisoner of war. Like, we saw that in the, like, The Pianist mm-hmm. had a very blue color palette. Even the beginning of X-Men.
Oh, yeah.
The first X-Men movie. But it's just, like, it's the blue plus the haze, you know, mm-hmm. is, like, there's so many Avengers 1, Man of Steel,
a lot of Marvel movies,
Game of Thrones, Endgame kind of did it.
Mm-hmm.
Endgame was kind of purple.
Yeah.
It was like a purple
that.
Haze.
I mean, Thanos was there and he's very purple.
He just
Hitler, baby.
Okay, so let's talk about the women in the movie, shall we?
Yeah, so many his wives.
Huge his wives
well,
movie.
Well, I think that's speaking of product of its time, like, I think that's another thing that people just didn't really bat an eye at, which is there's no women in leadership positions. There's, like, none of them contribute anything valuable to the plot. Mm. None of them come up with any idea. I guess the closest is Vivica A. Fox taking the initiative to drive a truck.
Yeah,
right. And save
she, like,
the first lady
some people.
Who dies
yeah.
anyway.
Right.
And, you know, that's just something that you would never see in, like, I think even in 2005 with War of the Worlds, it felt a little off that the girl child was just so helpless and mm-hmm. never, like, grew or learned anything. Like, even then it felt a little like...
I was surprised there weren't even, like, any, like, Mary Sue moments in this movie. I'm like, oh, someone's going to be able to, like... do because you are presented with two female characters that have the illusion of power. You've got the first lady mm-hmm. who is like this Hillary Clinton cipher, so it's like, okay, maybe she might be doing something.
Mm-hmm.
No. Then we have what's her name?
The character's name is Connie, who's the press secretary.
The press secretary. And it seems like, oh, she's in a position of power. Perhaps she will impact the plot at some point. But then the twist is she's Jeff Goldblum's wife.
Yes. Yes, yeah. Exactly. Because
he wants to win her back.
Yeah.
She wanted to be a career girl. And want love. And then in the end, she realizes, actually, he was right.
Love, yeah. Too. She's like,
I definitely want to talk about that conversation they have. But so we meet three main female characters in this story, and they are all introduced in the context of them being the romantic partner of one of the important male characters.
Right. We don't know that Connie is a romantic partner until about a half hour in.
Right.
But then we can all breathe a sigh of relief.
Don't worry, boys.
She's not a single woman over 30. Thank God. We were so worried.
Yes. So they all end up being just there to basically further characterize the male characters who they are romantically linked to in some way. Yeah, right. Because I was like, oh, Connie. Okay. Well, I don't think they name what her job is. So
they do pretty early.
Do they? Okay.
Yeah. Because I mean, it's another one of those, like, there is a lot of dialogue and a lot of quick exchanges.
Yeah, it's very blink and you'll miss it.
Someone does say, like, very exposition-y, like, you're the press secretary. Okay. This is your job, you know?
Okay, we know her job. We see that she's a woman in politics. She seems important, right? Like you said,
has the respect of hot president.
Yes,
they have that fun exchange about how he's hot. We can't say it enough.
But then, as soon as we find out that she is the ex-wife of Jeff Goldblum's character, she does nothing in the story except for, like, hold his hand and, like, look longingly at him.
They realize
sometimes.
The meaning of love. They realize that, you know, the world is burning. And, you know, they should have valued each other, but now they have this second chance because they didn't explode in a ball of fire.
I don't know if I'm more frustrated by Connie or by the First Lady, because both of them are just like, you start out with, like, you know, at least the feeling of, like, oh, there's some potential here. They could do something.
Right.
And then it's just the male characters in their lives just slowly sap them of their agency until they either die or retire.
Yeah.
Well, there's no government anymore. They don't need a press secretary.
That's true.
They blew up the White House. Where is there to do government at? Yeah, nowhere.
She's going to start a jewelry company.
She's going to start her Etsy store. And she and Jeff Goldblum will, I don't know, build a cable company together. It'll be great.
So then pretty early on, Will Smith's character and his girlfriend Jasmine are separated physically. And we cut away to Jasmine more than I thought we would. I figured like we would just kind of forget about her.
Well,
she wouldn't be a character.
Oh,
really.
Yeah. Because it's like to give this movie some like small ribbons, you know, Roland likes to, I don't know if he's overstating it, but like he would talk about how he had to fight the studio to get Will Smith cast because, you know, Captain Hillary's probably, you know, the closest thing to a main character.
Right.
And like they really didn't like the idea of a black lead.
I'm not surprised.
It was not bankable. Mm-hmm. And especially combining that with the fact that, you know, Jasmine probably has more screen time than even Connie. So she probably has
she's like the most fleshed out female character in the movie.
She probably
much.
Has the most screen time of all of the women. So, you know, and it's just like, well, for a woman of color to get a big-ish part in like, you know, the biggest movie of the year, it's like, okay, you're your gold star.
Yeah.
You're one.
Yeah.
Yay.
Good job.
You're one.
Woohoo. And then one of the other main characters is identifiably Jewish. And that, I feel like, is a pretty
He's not stereotypical at all.
No.
I
mean,
I look like a schlumiel.
I mean, yeah, Judge Hirsch.
Judge Hirsch. Good sport.
Yeah. I'm talking about Jeff Goldblum. But
representation win.
Yes.
Hurrah. Independence Day representation win.
I mean, it's just like, again, there's sort of like the iffy optics of a German man writing this character, and it's like,
sure,
sir,
where do you stand?
Okay.
Getting back to Jasmine, she is like, I mean, she's my favorite female character, mostly because we knew more about her and we saw her more than any other female character. We find out that she is a stripper, so we find out what her job is. Again, it's like kind of weird optics on that too, where I feel like, you know, like we get these two rich white ladies in these fancy white lady jobs, and then the only woman of color is a stripper.
A sex worker.
Yeah. So the optics there are.
And we contrived a way to get her in her like stripper outfit. her like right. Las Vegas showgirl stripper outfit.
Right.
I was like, what is this club? I've it's never like, been to a
yeah,
club
it's
like this.
That's like a samba outfit.
But she even explains how like that is just sort of forced into the movie. She was like, I just showed up to work to get my paycheck and they made
me
work.
I just came to get my paycheck. And like,
so
and
it's like, just oh, like, so we, yeah, we had to see this like gratuitous.
Who is coming into the strip club on the day of the alien invasion?
Right. Like, why is anyone at work? Like,
and then whatever, like Mario, who's the guy who owns the club? Mario's still yelling at her. She also did bring her child and her dog to the strip club, but she couldn't get a sitter.
Yeah.
That said, okay, so even though the optics on that are like funky and questionable, at least they do not, you know, like they don't use it as an excuse to degrade her. She like advocates for herself when Hillary Clinton's like, oh, I'm sorry, you're a sex worker. And she's like, no,
I'm not
fine.
Sorry.
It's like, that's how I
she's
make
like,
money.
I make money and like, I do it for my son who is worth it. Like,
yeah, it's, there's no like, well, one day I won't have to do this. You know, it's just like, you know, I'm fine with it. It's it's cool. They have their sex positive conversation.
Right.
It ends with Hillary Clinton being like, maybe it is cool.
Hadn't thought of it. Anyways, internally bleeding to death.
Thanks for talking to me in my last moments.
Kind of fun that was her final lesson. She's like, man, in life, I should have respected sex workers more. Yeah. Anyways, bye-bye.
I mean, at least, it's just like, well, if a woman had to get fridged, at least it's not the woman of color.
That's true. That is like another
gold star.
Representation win, baby.
Yeah.
Hurrah. But then we have Harry Connick Jr. telling Steve Hiller, oh, you're never going to get to fly a spaceship if you marry a stripper, because Will Smith is trying to be in NASA and Harry Connick Jr. is like, don't marry a stripper.
What an arbitrary.
I know. To me, it makes perfect sense.
Yeah.
It makes 1,000,000% sense to me.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, just like the optics of astronauts are... I just met an astronaut over the weekend. The people they select to be astronauts have to be perfect on so many levels. Like, not only are they like, you know, incredibly like extroverted and charismatic, they also like all of them have like the perfect nuclear family.
Oh, sure.
So I think it is.
Oh, that
like,
makes sense.
Yeah. You know, because like right now they're prepping up for Crew Dragon at SpaceX. And, you know, whenever they talk to the people who work at SpaceX, they always like blip play up. They're like, well, I can't wait to come home to my children. Boy, I sure do have children.
Boy, am I hetero and have children.
Please
I
don't
love.
Blow us up. So, cool. Yeah, no, I think that it's just like as silly as that is, I think it's like, yeah, that would absolutely be a concern.
Sure. But also, Harry Connick Jr.'s character sucks so fucking bad.
So obnoxious.
He's like imitating Jesse Jackson at one point.
Well, it's interesting because he like has the role normally of the like goofy black friend who dies.
Right.
So it's like it's interesting that they...
And he's doing that voice.
Yeah.
It's like, so bizarre. Yeah.
It's interesting because it's almost like they wrote that for a black guy.
They wrote it for Will Smith and then they reversed the part or something.
They cast Matthew Perry before Harry Connick Jr.
Right. So, like, it was always intended for an annoying white guy. It's so weird. I don't know.
Yeah. Harry Connick Jr.'s performance is out of control.
We've got to take a break.
No Iron Giant.
We must take a break from Harry Connick Jr., and then we will come right back.
As we wave goodbye to winter's chill, it's time to give our lawn a little love and embrace the freshness of spring. And guess what? The Home Depot's Spring Black Friday sale is here to make it all a breeze. Snag the Ryobi One Plus leaf blower for just $89 and say goodbye to tedious yard work. With a powerful 90 miles an hour of clearing power, your lawn will look spotless in a flash. And the best part? Thanks to the convenience of online shopping, you can effortlessly place your order via the app, cruise into the store for pickup, and find yourself chilling in your freshly spruced up yard in no time. Don't let this awesome deal blow away. Get your hands on the Ryobi One Plus leaf blower for only $89. Yeah, just $89. Exclusively during Spring Black Friday at the Home Depot. How doers get more done.
Are you on the hunt for a new home this spring, but don't know where to start? Fisher Homes is your solution. Your new home should reflect you from the front door to the kitchen and even your outdoor space. Start your journey by selecting your ideal home site, like in a cul-de-sac or that's tree-lined, and then choose from a variety of expertly designed floor plans. Bring it all together at our Lifestyle Design Center. Let Fisher Homes be your new home solution this spring and start making memories at fisherhomes.com.
Spectrum One is a big deal. You get Spectrum Internet with the most reliable internet speeds, free advanced Wi-Fi for enhanced security and privacy, and a free Spectrum Mobile Unlimited line with nationwide 5G included, all while saving big. For the big speed, big reliability, and big savings you want, get Spectrum One. Just $49.99 a month for 12 months. Visit spectrum.com/bigdeal for full details. Offer subject to change. Valid for qualified residential customers only. Service not available in all areas. Restrictions apply.
We're kind of wrapping up the discussion on Jasmine, where it's like there's pros, there's cons.
She kicks down a door.
She kicks down a door because women, when in action movie, must kick something at some point.
She's like, you know, Daenerys. She's the unburnt.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We're just going to.
Yeah, she manages to survive.
Yeah, that closet is heat resistant. Don't worry.
But there is like another kind of, she is a caretaker and a motherly role for the majority of the movie. We do get to know what her job is. We do get to see her talk about herself and advocate for herself. But she is protecting her child. Not to say that she shouldn't, but she is kind of put into that maternal role. And then also starts to rescue people. And then also briefly kind of becomes Hillary Clinton's mommy nurse. So... I mean,
there's nothing like inherently wrong.
No,
want to be clear, yeah, with like,
there's nothing wrong with being a good parent,
right?
Well, but I think one thing I think that's only kind of very recently started to change is like when you have action movies and disaster movies, men's narratives tend to be, we are here to solve the problem and fight the problem. Women's narratives tend to be survival narratives. Mm-hmm. And I think hers is, you know, kind of like the version of that, where it's like during the, disaster, she is the face of humanity who had to endure it. And she then has to survive until she is rescued by Will Smith.
Right.
So you see that a lot, like, you know, with like Hunger Games is, you know, like at least the first one is a survival narrative.
Mm. Another like weird thing about this movie that I don't know, I see a movie like this and I don't expect to see great fathering, but there's pretty much like everyone is a good parent in the movie. Mm-hmm. Hot President is a good parent. Hillary Clinton's a good parent. Vivica A. Fox is a good parent. Will Smith is a great stepdad. Even Randy Quaid, you know, he's doing his best.
He's trying. And probably lay off the sauce, but...
Sick kid gets his medicine.
Judd Hirsch is like, don't get off that cold floor.
Right.
And he thinks of the idea for the computer virus.
So it's like there's... I feel like the fathers and the mothers are parenting equally well, but... The, you know, fathers get to go off and do cool shit, and then
right,
the mothers
whereas,
don't.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the mother, yeah, so that's the thing.
Oh, it's like my favorite shot of the movie, because I have all of them are my favorite shot of the movie, is where after the aliens are beat, then, you know, Robert Loggia goes, "We got them beat, Tom." And then he goes, "How about our boys? Are they back yet?" And then in the background, you see Vivica A. Fox and Connie, like, step into the frame and be like... Yeah, are
I
they?
I hope our boys are okay.
Hope our boys are back.
God, they're just, yeah, they're completely just sidelined for the, I mean, whatever.
For Act 3.
Jeff Goldblum, yeah, for July 4th.
Well, they do say, you better come back.
Right, yeah. Because
they both say it, like, in their own
and
special
Connie
way.
Goes, why does it have to be you? Why can't some other, like, human sacrifice go?
And then the boys come back, and then the two women run toward them, and then the kiss.
Kayla, when the boys are back in town,
Vivica A. Fox is looking great in her short shorts.
Vivica A. Fox looks not like she's just been through the end of the world.
Another thing I want to say about her character is, and I'm curious what everyone thinks about this, but she is the only one who seems to voice any concern about the impending alien invasion. She's like, I don't feel good about this. And
everyone
then
else is...
Will Smith is like, what, they didn't fly 90 billion light years just to like kill us all? And it's like, of course they did. Like,
I mean, they might be asking for help.
Maybe.
It could be like in...
might be an arrival
or it could
something.
Be like in Octavia Butler's Lilith's Brood trilogy, where it's just like, we need some genetic diversity. Randy Quaid, you're looking
pretty
robust.
Good. There is a moment during the, and this is just like made me laugh, when Will Smith is like leaving, and then there's something, you know, apocalyptic happening in the distance, Vivek A. Fox runs out to him. She's like, honey, 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 and like doesn't notice the apocalypse right. until Will Smith says, look.
Look.
And then she goes,
it's like, how could you not see God. It?
Yeah, I had someone on Twitter, because I was like, where is this? Because this is obviously a place that exists in the real world.
Yeah.
And some like, you know, it is because the magic of Twitter, someone like within 5 minutes was like, here's the address. It's in Glendale.
Oh,
wow.
Yeah.
Nice.
What a great gallery.
The magic is in Glendale.
Yeah. So the point is, Will Smith drove from Glendale to Orange County, mm-hmm. like kind of the south part of Orange County. Mm-hmm. I mean, it makes sense because Jasmine has to go through downtown LA to get to El Toro. Mm-hmm. So that's why, I mean, so it kind of makes sense that she had, she works in downtown LA. She had to get her paycheck.
Yeah.
Right. So, and then she got talked into working.
So mm-hmm. she was on her way.
And everybody's like getting out. And I feel like it must needs be remarked. President Hadi is not a good president.
No!
He is quite bad at the presidenting. Like, his first, you know, like, maybe let's not evacuate the cities. Like,
yeah. He's worried about re-election.
He's too busy.
What? Is he afraid he's going to offend the aliens?
I think like, he's secretly like, okay, let's alien nuke the states that don't vote for me.
Yeah. And I'm just like, I have some, like, and Jeff Goldblum, come on. Even if they nuked every single alien ship, that would not cause nuclear winter. Do you know how many nuclear tests there have been, Jeff Goldblum? It's been thousands.
So Jasmine is like, hey, I think there might be something bad. I have a bad feeling about these ominous alien ships that are hovering over every major city in the world.
Right.
So I'm wondering is that kind of playing to the trope of like a woman's intuition kind of thing where like
I think she's the only person looking at the gigantic doom machine.
I mean, like, let's be real. Like, black people do tend to have a better self-preservation instinct.
Sure.
So I think it's, like, speaking to that truth of, like, all the white people are like, you know, they're probably here to party.
But then Will Smith says that, too, and he's like,
well,
there's
a dude.
Nothing.
Right he's true. A guy. You know.
Yeah. I'm glad that someone said it because it is very weird to be like, people seem remarkably unconcerned.
That was the 90s. They're just like, yay, the aliens are here. I love E.T. I love E.T.
So I guess it's good that, like, we see, like, the one person who, like, voices any sort of concern and ends up being right about it is a woman. So,
yes. All
right, that's good.
That's true. On the other hand, there is Mary, his wife, Whitmore, a.k.a. Hillary Clinton. Mm. And she's away. Do we know what she's doing? She's away on First Lady business.
Yeah, she's
sort.
Like doing First Lady stuff in LA.
Right. So she's away and she's, you know, talking to Hadi president and he's like, hey, I think like, babe, I think the world might be like ending. So you should come home. And she's like, no, I have to finish doing this. Mm. Which is, like, dumb, but whatever. She said no to her husband? Fine.
But there is a gold star.
But then she is later punished for that decision because she dies.
Yeah.
Because she didn't leave when he told her to. She does end up dying. And with her dying breath, and this just like, oh, like, all right. With her dying breath, she apologizes to her husband for not coming home when he said she should have.
Yeah.
And that, you know, if only she had listened to her husband, she wouldn't have died.
Yeah.
An amazing lesson.
And her last word is liar.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Like, they have, you know, it's just like kind of one of those things where it's like, it is difficult to write, like, in jokey banter between two characters mm-hmm. because it's like, it's hard to translate, but their weird, like, relationship in joke is he'll, like, say an obvious lie and she'll go liar. And the first time they do that is when, like, he wakes up and she calls him and he's, like, he's got his daughter in bed with him.
Yeah.
And he's like, I have a confession to make. I'm lying next to a beautiful brunette. And I'm like, weird.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's a weird joke to make, President.
About your child.
Hoffman. Yeah. And she's, you know, and she's like, or, and what was the other one? Like, he'd say like an obvious lie and she'd go liar. And like the last little in jokey banter they do is him going, the doctors think you're going to be fine.
What a horrible thing to say to your dying wife.
Goes, liar.
And then goes, I'm dead.
And then, like, blood burbles up out of her esophagus.
And also, no one is, like, no one is worried enough about little Mae Whitman. Like,
right.
She gets a hug from her dad.
Yeah,
but
she handles it well.
I'm like, does she? I really understand what's going on? Because the next day.
She's sleeping.
Yeah, she's asleep, and now it's the 4th of July, and there's, you know, alien arms are on fire, and we're smiling.
Like, the two children, Vivica A. Fox's son and Mae Whitman, like, when they're hiding in the bunker. Mm-hmm. And, like, it's, like, I love 90s movies because, like, children do not act like children, mm-hmm. where they're just, like, quietly sitting while chaos is erupting around them. People are screaming, and the little boy says to her, "Are you scared?" And she quietly nods and goes, and he goes, "Me too."
You're like, cut to carnage kids.
Outside.
Liar.
Yeah, she shakes her head and he goes, "Liar."
Like, you kids, you're crazy.
Can we talk about the conversation between David Levinson, aka Jeff Goldblum, and Connie, the press secretary?
Where they talk about their breakup.
Where they talk about, yeah. Yes. The first time they're on screen together, they're talking about a fight that David and the president got into where David punched him in the face because he thought his wife was having an affair with Whitmore. Mm-hmm.
She wasn't, but she did later.
But she, right, or something. I don't
know. Now I'm doing it.
Yeah, now I'm fucking
the president's in an open marriage. They're cool with it.
Mm-hmm. Liar. So that's a fun thing that happens. And then they have this conversation about her career when they're at Area 51. She's talking about working in the White House and how the president is a good man. Oh, yeah, he's drunk.
He's getting drunker throughout the scene.
Yeah. She's like, the president's a good man. And he says, he better be. You left me for him. Or, you know, your career. And she says, you know, it wasn't just my career. It was the biggest opportunity of my life. I wanted my life to make a difference. I wanted my life to mean something. And then he says, and I wasn't ambitious enough for you. And then they start talking about him and how smart he is, but how unambitious he is. Which
he's
like
just every Redditor. Like, I'm a secret. I'm a secret genius. Like, or it's just like, you know what? I could be really like successful. I'm a genius who's lazy. I'm just a lazy genius.
I'm just too tired.
Right. And it's like he refused.
An underachiever.
He apparently refused to correct that problem, and so she left him. Like,
yeah.
Right.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's just like he just would not move for her. Is what it seems like. He just is like comfortable in his rut in New York, being a engineer at Comcast. Or whatever.
I love that male narrative of just like, well, I am smart enough to do something like better, but I'm not going to, but you know I could.
Yeah.
So
I just haven't been presented with the correct opportunity, like an alien apocalyptic invasion.
Yeah, now's my chance.
Wait and see, babe.
But like, I feel like this could have been a much more interesting conversation about like how he resents her career ambitions because of his like fragile male ego, which is something that happens in a lot of, you know, hetero couples, and that she could like call him out for not respecting her and her agency and all that stuff, which is where it seems like the conversation's headed. But then they just end up talking about what a genius he is.
So disappointing, yeah.
And then it ends with her saying, "I never stop loving you." Ugh. And then that's the beginning of their like, romance rekindling.
It wasn't enough, was it? Now, it reminds me of like Michael Bay does the mean version of this a lot. Like Transformers 1, which steals a lot from Independence Day. Yes. Also kind of steals that narrative of like a guy who's like a slacker and useless that, you know, given the opportunity can rise above and, you know, be the successful boy. But I think the thing is, like, with, you know, a character like Sam Witwicky, he is absolutely meant to be, like, the cipher. He is the self-insert character. Mm-hmm. And I think there's a reason why, you know, these movies are always written like this. Like, it is basically, you know, meant to appease the way men see themselves. Mm-hmm. You know, that is reflexive media, where media reinforces a societal norm. You know, people internalize that, and therefore media is created that, you know, is sympathetic to like this particular worldview, and back and forth, and then like the cycle continues. So I think, you know, that of course that conversation was never ever going to challenge him, because it, you know, was meant to validate that self-image of I'm just a secret genius, I'm just lazy, you're the problem because you don't see my secret genius.
Right. And like you wanted too much for yourself. And also just like equating, like it couldn't just be that she wanted a career. It had to have also been another man.
Yeah, he's like, oh, you work for the president, so you must be fucking the president. Yeah. Which, I mean, with Bill Clinton,
I mean, like,
fair.
I think maybe Jeff Goldblum's just not a very good he's not a very good partner.
Yeah, like, no.
He's jealous of her job and of her being in the same room with other men. Yeah. And like, she's like in politics. Most of the people she's going to be in the same room with are going to be men. Right. And it was just like, he just knew that about himself. He couldn't deal with it.
And like the Jeff Goldblum character, just kind of speaking to what you're saying about like reinforcing how men see themselves. I feel like it even goes a step further, because it's not just saying like, oh, like there's a large amount of men who, you know, feel that they are secretly capable of more than the opportunities that they're given, mm-hmm. and they're angry about it. But in Jeff Goldblum's case, they also make that true. And so everyone around him is like, you are a genius.
Like, yeah. Because it's like you need to be, presented with extraordinary circumstance in order to realize your potential. And it's a very appealing narrative. And sure. I think it's like, it tends to star men because they, you know, tend to need the most validation. But also, like, I think they're, male audiences are going to respond a lot more strongly to this idea of, like, I'm a secret genius than women are. That's why you never really see, like, women characters that are just like, I'm just a schlub until, like, women have to... they start hyper competent and good at something, mm-hmm. and then they get more hyper competent. Right. You know, it's like Captain Marvel or Katniss or every female Marvel character.
Yes.
Fortunately,
all men are secret geniuses.
Yes, that's true. You're all very smart.
You're all brilliant.
The same thing kind of applies to the president, where in the beginning it's set up that the public thinks that he's a wimp. He's not like the fierce leader that Americans thought they elected. And then he redeems himself by going into battle as a fighter pilot, as a soldier, to fight off the alien invaders. So it's like the idea of like a man showing his worth by like being a warrior, a protector. Like that's how men show how fucking awesome they are and that they're not wimps. And I mean, it probably got him reelected in the upcoming election, because he's like,
I don't think there's
going
to be elections anymore. I think it's like it immediately descends into fascism.
It is.
Like, yeah, because like alien survivors. There's alien Guantanamo Bay. It's, you know, and it's very controversial because it's just like, well, should we treat them the way they treated us? And then like,
it's like in District, what was it?
District 9.
Them into
It's like that, but worse. Like, there's torture. They try to hide it.
Is
you know?
District 9 just like July 5th in the world of Independence Day? I feel like if this movie extended to July 5th, yeah, it would get very dark very quickly, because then Mae Whitman needs to learn that her mother
Everybody's
is dead,
punching
not
aliens in the head.
Right. It's just going to be a disaster.
Yeah. But it's funny because, like, Independence Day Resurgence, I guess it took a very humanity after the Black Plague approach to rebuilding, because everything's great. We've got all this technology, world peace achieved, you know, when, like, you know, just like, we built really well. Everything's great. Hong Kong's looking pretty nice.
I have a question for the table. Do you think, yes or no, that this movie was approved of and partially funded by the Pentagon?
It absolutely was not.
It was not.
I would have guessed, though, yes.
I guessed that it was, and then I did some research, because we've talked like briefly in the Transformers episode, and I think also in The Rock.
The Rock.
Mm-hmm. Of just like movies that were signed off on. I mean, the Transformers, the entire, I mean, you know,
oh,
better
they,
than anyone.
They got so, I mean, like, here's the thing. It's
all
like,
of them.
Yeah, it's actually really hard to get numbers on this sort of thing, because like for the Pentagon, it's classified, and for Hollywood, they don't have to open their books. So it's like, from project to project, you don't know what the subsidy looked like, but you can tell that it's probably a lot more sizable if there's actually a tie-in ad campaign. Like Man of Steel had that, and Captain Marvel had that.
Yeah, Captain Marvel is like one of the more recent movies that it majorly promotes the Air Force.
Right.
Like, I mean, it goes back to like after Top Gun came out, like enlistment went way the fuck up. Mm-hmm. Every Transformers movie, a couple Marvel movies, not all of them, like Winter Soldier, Iron Man 1 and 2, but not the Avengers, because I guess the...
No, they didn't. Actually, Avengers got shot down for a pretty similar reason that Independence Day got shot down, which was they didn't like the shadowy cabal of... the powers that be in the Avengers that were like giving secret orders to S.H.I.E.L.D. That's what they didn't like.
Yeah.
And in Independence Day, they didn't like Area 51.
Well, and then another thing that they didn't like about Independence Day that I found, because it is like hard to find details, but it seems to kind of come down to this one guy, Phil Strub, until like less than a year ago.
We could go on about Phil Strub.
That's not even his job anymore. He was removed at the end of last year, and now it's another guy.
Oh, he was there for like the entire eight. Yeah, he was there for like almost 35 years.
Yeah, I went in a Phil Strub hole.
Yeah, Phil Strub is interesting because he's like the shadow man that no one can get an interview with him.
He is like, so he, for our listeners, he is like the connection between Hollywood and the Pentagon, the military. Like any movie that receives their seal of approval have to go through him directly. And it was like that since possibly, like, it's like the 80s at least.
Yeah, it was the 80s, like early 80s. Like Top Gun was definitely in there.
All the way up until the end of 2018. And there was never a press release, but he's no longer in that position. It's someone else.
I had no idea.
It's confusing. But so one of the reasons given for Independence Day, and it's like, again, he will never state this, but I guess that Will Smith's Navy pilot dating a stripper was a problem for the Pentagon as well.
See?
You're right.
See?
Yeah. Yep. So this movie did not get the Pentagon seal of approval. And I guess as a result, had to develop effects even better because they didn't have any really assistance. Okay. So there was some special effects
there. Right. So moral of the story, feminist icon, the Pentagon. And I mean, I feel like this movie does do a fair amount to normalize sex work and stripping more than a lot of movies we have seen, which we'll just have a scene that takes place in a strip club for no reason and there are just naked women there as scenery.
Yeah, right.
So at least we don't, at least it goes a few steps beyond that.
And to Roland Emmerich's credit,
you can kind of tell the movie wasn't directed by a straight guy.
Right.
It's just the camera clearly has no interest in Jasmine sexually. he thinks she's pretty, but camera never leers on her. Like, if you can, again, compare it, the obvious comparison being Michael Bay, there's never any leering shots that are objectifying or fetishizing. Yeah. She's always very human. The first time you see her, she's fully clothed in plaid and has a ponytail. Mm. And the one stripping seems very, very short.
It's very showgirly.
Yeah, it was so funny. The way it's shot is just I like women. Yes, I like, looks good. It feels a little
I respect women.
A little uncanny valley.
A little I don't really know how to make a woman look sexy because I don't really want that.
But a lesser director probably would have been we're not going to get Pentagon money if we leave a stripper narrative in. And because it could technically be removed from the story and not affect that much, which, does that speak to how much the women affect the plot? Yes. But it's I thought it was cool that he didn't cut it, even though that was one of the reasons given.
Yeah.
Sex positive. She's here to normalize sex work to Hillary Clinton.
Yes. She showed her a thing or two about a thing or two.
You with your assumptions. I make good money. I own a house in Glendale.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm not a ballerina. Honestly, I can't afford a house in Glendale. That's sick.
Who can? this is such an American-centric movie for being directed by a German guy.
Mm-hmm. Well, his follow-up was The Patriot.
Oh, what?
Yeah.
What?
Roland has an interesting
double down.
An interesting, I think it was The Patriot, or it was either Godzilla or The Patriot. Actually, I think Godzilla was next, and The Patriot came after that.
All right.
But yeah, he has an interesting filmography.
But it's just all the people in the movie who are the most capable, the ones who are going to figure out how to crack this alien problem are all in America.
Mm-hmm. And everyone else in the rest of the world was just sitting around twiddling their thumbs. Yeah, it's about bloody time.
Yeah.
Best scene ever.
He's also The Day After Tomorrow, right? Mm-hmm. That's him too.
Other best movie.
He loves a disaster.
He
loves a mess.
Oh, God. Because that was when he was trying, because I think that's post 9/11 Roland.
That's his blue movie.
Yeah, where he's I'm going to use my, disaster movie powers to make money. Which, again, to Roland's credit, he's one of the few people keeping non-franchise films alive. Because, you think of the biggest grossing movie in 1996 being Independence Day. That would never happen now, ever, ever, ever.
Right.
But yeah, because back when, Day After Tomorrow, him trying to I'm going to make a point, and I'm going to make people take this seriously. And I think it probably had the opposite effect.
What a goofy, that's like a Jake Gyllenhaal, Emmy Rossum.
Yeah. And it kind of does the same thing so with like President Dick Cheney at the end, where it's just like he's trying to be sympathetic to the powers that be and give them the benefit of the doubt.
I loved that movie.
Where they ever like all the Americans like breaking into Mexico.
Right.
Switcheroo.
Is Dennis Quaid is in that movie?
Yes, the other Quaid.
Speaking of a Quaid.
Quaid the Greater.
I have more to with the Quaid boys.
I want to say just a little bit about Randy Quaid's kids.
Yes. Oh, yes.
So the, we learned in the backstory that there's no mom because I feel like all the moms are dead or die in this movie for the most part.
It's basically a Disney
movie. Yeah, exactly. Because Jeff Goldblum's mom is dead and then the first lady also dies. So Randy Quaid has two sons and a daughter. The sons get to talk a lot when we see them. You know, they're in the scene. They're in the foreground, whereas, like, the daughter hardly says anything. She's usually in the background. The one scene where she is the focus, she is with a boy who is trying to convince her to have sex with him, to, like, lose her virginity with him. Yeah. And then her brother comes in, and he's like, come on, we gotta go. And she's like, I'm not going anywhere. And then her brother yanks her away.
That happens to her twice, too, because Randy Quaid does that to her one of the times where she keeps being like, I want to do this. And then someone around her is just like, no. Slam. What's her name?
At Area 51. Wow. It's finally something about Independence Day. I don't know. I do not know this character's
What's
name.
What's that character's name? I was trying to, I like rewound scenes. Like, I was looking for it because I knew that.
Older sister and Mrs. Doubtfire. And...
Yes.
Because Miguel's
Alicia,
her brother.
According to.
Alicia.
Yeah, according to IMDb, it's her character's name is Alicia.
Sure. Nothing. She never appears.
I don't think her name
woman,
is ever
so.
Mentioned. At least in the theatrical cut. I think it might be in the director's cut. Because, again, like, the director's cut is, like, so much meandering of, like, you know, there's a lot more of, like, Miguel being resentful of Randy Quaid. And in fairness, he has good reason to be resentful. Like, the cue man, he needs to lay off the sauce. He's not being a very good father.
I just feel like, sure, Randy Quaid does come in at the very end and saves the day, but I feel like his storyline should be cut entirely. Have someone else save the day. Have the fucking president save the day. I don't care, but just like there should be more real estate
make
given.
Randy Quaid the president.
Yeah.
Cut Bill Pullman.
Yes. To me, anything is worth. Hello, boys.
I'm back.
Yes. Really, and then the crowd cheers. Yeah, actually, I guess in preparation for this, not really. one of the, in the distant past, episodes of Game of Thrones that left a really bad taste in my mouth. I had some people over for a watch party. I was like, we're watching Independence Day. Because it, like, it's just, especially, like, if you have really, you know, a nice, like, home system, it's like, it's just, it hold, like, the, you know, the effects hold up really well. Uh-huh. But it's just, like, the, you know, joyous dumbassery, like, of, like, you know, Randy Quaid's culminating moment. It always makes me happy.
His suicide mission.
Yeah. And then, like, the music swells and alien body parts are raining from the sky. And it's just so, like, you know... USA.
And it's like, I can't think of any other screen moment like that where, again, it was like, if there was a suicide moment played today, it would be extremely grim. We would, you know, but this is like a blaze of glory moment. Like, it's not meant to be sad at all.
Yeah.
Like, when three children have just lost their father.
There's three children are cool.
They're like, I'm so proud of my dad. Like, I'm not going to shed a tear.
We inherited the RV. It's fine.
Now there's just three kids in an RV, which is a series I would watch.
Yeah.
I mean, I just think that we should have cut the Randy Quaid subplot and spent more time developing the female characters.
I love Randy.
That's all I have to say.
Randy's gotta stay. Okay. But give Randy's daughter more to do. I'd say cut one of Randy's sons.
Yeah, we don't need all three of them.
We don't need both
have
sons.
Have her be the puker.
We actually don't. We could get rid of both sons. We could make her mad at Randy Quaid and sick. And
then
we'd
have a petulant daughter. Like, you're not my real father.
Yeah.
I don't know. I kind of like that it's a boy who's like, you're not my real dad. You're just the guy who married my mom. I think that's in the director's cut.
So moody. He's got a middle part. You're like, 96. Yes.
Can we talk briefly about how this movie handles queerness, which is that we see Harvey Fierstein in the movie.
You're the gay of the early 90s.
Yes.
Played the same character in
Mrs. Doubtfire. Yes. You know, it's a pretty stereotypical portrayal of a gay man. Then he dies almost immediately.
Right.
And then there's another moment where Steve Heller is at base with Harry Connick Jr. Harry picks up the ring that he's going to propose to Jasmine with. So it looks like Harry Connick Jr. is like on his knees proposing to Will Smith. That's what it looks like. And then this other guy walks in. And then he sees them.
I love that joke.
And then he like walks away.
And then he's like cool with it. He's like, you guys are having a moment. I'm going to leave you to it.
I'm glad that you have that interpretation. I interpret it more as like I don't want any part of this. Let me slowly back away and then run.
I guess I'm coming at it from the like knowing Roland Emmerich and his background. It was just like A, being a gay man, B, being incredibly naive.
That context does help.
Yes. Yeah. Because I think he thinks Harvey Fierstein is hilarious. And I don't think he sees it as self-deprecating or like as playing into stereotypes. Uh-huh. I think he sees it as, isn't Harvey Fierstein hilarious? Isn't it funny when he goes, forget my lawyer? You know,
he's cracking up behind the camera.
Yeah, like he's like, oh, I just like the fact that his death is, oh, crap. You know, like, again, something you would never, ever see in a post-9/11 world. It's like, it's like not even played for pathos. It's just like, oh, well, we lost another one.
So strange.
Because, to me, Harvey Fierstein plays way less into queer tropes and more into Jewish tropes. He's like calling everybody and he's like, you gotta go stay with Aunt Esther, you know? And then, like, he's on the phone with his lawyer. He's on the phone with, like, every person he has even a remote business relationship. Right.
Yeah. He's like, for $300 an hour, like, you can put me through to his house in the Hamptons.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, that didn't bother me too much, just knowing that it's a queer director. And it's like, but also Roland Emmerich made Stonewall. Yeah. And
I think Roland Emmerich is very, like,
he's got some weird.
I know. I think he just, like, and this is not to excuse it, but I really do think he comes from a place of incredible privilege because he was raised incredibly wealthy. He was lived in boarding schools his entire childhood, and then he just immediately got a ton of money and started making movies. So I think he was really insulated from, the struggles because, he's not really a part of any community except for the community of the incredibly wealthy. So I think he's incredibly detached from any kind of conversation.
He's an interesting cultural. When I was doing more research on just him in general, one of the first things that pops up is an interview he did in 2015, headline, Roland Emmerich, being gay in Hollywood has been easy. And you're just
I think that is true because he's easy to work with by all accounts. Mm-hmm. He stays on budget. He doesn't rabble rouse. He doesn't agitate. He doesn't advocate. And it's interesting because Stonewall was a passion project of his. Like, that's basically why he made Independence Day Resurgence, was so he could get funding for Stonewall. Huh. And you can really tell just that he has no connection with any queer communities. He sees it as like, yes, these are my people, but he does not engage with them at all.
Right.
Or someone would have been like, buddy, this is a bad look.
Did he ask another queer person about
literally any? Like, no, I just think he's very isolated, and the fact that he just kind of, you know, plays the game, and it doesn't seem to ever occur to him that to ask for rights for anyone but himself.
Okay.
He really has not had a hard time, especially because he had like two big hits right out of the gate, and he could just write his ticket to make any movie he wanted. Because, you know, it's just because, like, he was out, but he never did any advocacy.
Yeah.
I think he considered making Stonewall advocacy.
Yeah.
All right.
Well, love an eccentric rich person.
Yeah.
Any other final thoughts about the movie before we wrap up?
It's just fun.
Yeah. It's fun.
It's just fun. I love it so much.
The shot with the dog, I liked that. Yeah. When the dog it's like escapes jumping the explosion. I was like, this is a big budget movie because there is a dog doing something heroic.
Mm. I have infinite love for, like, again, it draws back to the question of, can a stupid movie be good? Because it's like, because I was thinking about like the months ago finale of Game of Thrones, which was it was kind of dumb. Mm. Like, and you know, it's just like you have a show like Game of Thrones, which can't be dumb because it was falling from such a like a place of, you know, internal consistency and sharp dialogue and, you know, character consistency. And then it just kind of got dumb in service of the plot. And for that reason, it was not good. But Independence Day is deeply dumb and very naive and like just, you know, incredibly like myopic and, you know, hyper nationalist. I'm just like, I don't want to say I excuse all of it, but I think I can make a good case for it being a very tight, well-made movie in a way that Roland Emmerich has never been able to replicate. Mm-hmm. So I think that Independence Day gives hope for stupid stories everywhere.
I mean, that was a speech as beautiful as Bill Pullman's.
You need to like, hey, editor, you need to put Bill Pullman's like powerful music under my speech about how dumb movies can be good, actually.
And the movie does pass the Bechdel test.
Yeah, a couple times.
Talking about sex positivity, even.
That conversation, yeah.
That came as a surprise to me. Jasmine and her colleague, who gets named as Tiffany. Talk about the welcome party for the aliens and how Jasmine tells Tiffany that she should not go, even though Tiffany goes and then dies. And then Jasmine, and the First Lady talk about that conversation starts with her son and then about Will Smith. But then for a few lines, they talk about their careers.
Yeah. There's a few tiny exchanges between Lil Mae Whitman and her mom, too, that are just like, hi, mommy.
Oh,
hi.
Yeah.
But I mean, just like there was especially that scene with Jasmine and the First Lady. You're like, all right, we've got some there's some meat to this.
Yeah, there's some substance here.
I actually think, I mean, we may need to go back on this, like review this, but I actually think most of Roland's movies pass the Bechdel test.
Interesting.
I think Godzilla might be Godzilla and the Patriot might be the two exceptions.
Right. Also, though, remember that probably 99% of the dialogue is not passing the Bechdel test. So,
Another possible minimum.
Another tiny ribbon.
Yeah.
A lot of tiny ribbons on this gigantic movie.
I suppose.
And then there's like a lot of red pins.
Like
some gold stars, a lot of red pins. This is why I love movies like this that are like super watchable but deeply flawed. Like that's another reason why I love Transformers 07 was that was the only one that was watchable of the group. But it was so just so much to deconstruct, like, you know, the military and the terrible characters and the way it's shot. Like, oh,
I mean, you're,
I could go on.
You're
an
incredible series.
I could make
it.
A series about that.
So good. Let's rate the movie on our nipple scale. 0 to 5 nipples based on its representation of women. I'm going to give it like a half nipple. Because even though there are some kind of like pleasant surprises in the movie, like it passing the Bechdel test, we know what each of the women does for a living. Stuff like that, but also they're all just like characterized by the relationships that they have to men. Really no time is spent developing them as people who are important to the story in any way. Mm-hmm. It's just the women are there because they want to kiss the boys.
La, la, la.
So half nipple, and I will give my half nipple to, is the dog's name Boomer?
Boomer.
Boomer the dog.
I will give it one nipple. Also, Alfred Molina could have been a hottie president. He could have been Randy Quaid. He can do anything, so he could really be almost anyone in this movie. But I'm going to give it one because sex positive, ?
Yeah.
I thought that was like a pleasant thing to see there be, even though women have no effect on the plot in the movie whatsoever. If you removed all the women from the movie, it would just be different. 30 minutes shorter.
Yeah.
And then they fridged a woman, and that's just so lazy and boring. But I did like that, you know, they went out of their way to, you know, fully characterize a sex worker in a way that wasn't shamey or shitty. And
that's true, yeah.
But then they fridged someone immediately after. Lots to consider.
Sure.
I'm going to give it one nippy, and I'm going to kick it back to Baby Mae Whitman.
All right.
Yeah.
Well, you know what? I'm super biased. I'm grading it on a curve because 90s.
Sure.
I'm going to give it 2 just because I love Jasmine so much.
Mm-hmm.
I think it is super curvy because when I think of, like, you know, like even a movie like Men in Black with its one woman.
Oh,
you know, and like everything else. Again, Jurassic Park with its one woman and
the one child woman.
And the one child.
Which there is a Jurassic Park reference whenever Jeff Goldblum at the end, when they're trying to fly out of the mothership, he says, must go faster, which is also what Jeff Goldblum said in Jurassic Park.
Brave of him.
I know.
So, yeah.
Cool. Well, Lindsay, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you so much for having me.
We love having you every time. What would you like to plug? Where can people follow you online, etc.?
You can find me on Twitter at TheLindsayEllis because I made that account 2008 back before I realized I had to live with it forever. And on YouTube, my YouTube channel is just my name and my debut novel, which totally has a title. Mm. So it has such a title, will be out from St. Martin's Press in 2020, hopefully. Yes. And it does definitely have whispers of Independence Day. Aliens are involved.
Whew, love it.
Good. Yes. Read her book when it comes out. Watch Lindsay's.
It'll have such a title.
It'll have so much of a title. Incredible.
I can't even say it. It's just so exactly. good.
It's just like, whew.
I don't want to give it that power.
Yes.
Saying it out loud.
And then
I don't want to be too successful.
And then watch all of Lindsay's video essays. We have, and we love them so very much.
Yeah, they've informed some of our takes.
Yes, indeed. Yeah. So thanks again. You can follow us ever heard of us at Bechtelcast on the social media platforms that you tend to use, Twitter, mm-hmm. Instagram, sometimes Facebook.
You can also subscribe to our Patreon, aka Matreon. Celebrate your independence this year by giving us $5.
What a great
way. Incredible use of democracy.
If you are patriotic, then you should
be matriotic and give us money.
Matriotic.
Matriotic. The Matriot, directed by Roland Emmerich. All female reboot of The Patriot? The Matriot.
Well, I mean, Mel Gibson is canceled and Heath Ledger is dead, R.I.P. So we have to
make The Matriot.
Yes.
So you can sign up. It's $5 a month for 2 bonus episodes every month.
Plus our entire backlog.
So it's almost 50 episodes at this point.
So many, yes.
We can't stop and we refuse to stop. We're very sick.
Yes. You can buy our merch. We've got Feminism is the Law Now.
Yeah.
Woman in STEM. Rise of the Matriarchy are some of our newer ones, plus all of our classics like Feminist Icon Alfa Molina, etc. At tpublic.com/thebechtelcast.
Yes.
We will not go quietly into the night. We will not vanish without a fight. We will live on.
We're going
to survive.
That was way better than my plan was to start singing America the Beautiful. So that was, you kicked my ass.
Today, we celebrate our Independence Day.
Oh, beautiful force. Bye.
Bye.
Are you on the hunt for a new home this spring, but don't know where to start? Fisher Homes is your solution. Your new home should reflect you, from the front door to the kitchen and even your outdoor space. Start your journey by selecting your ideal home site, like in a cul-de-sac or that's tree-lined, and then choose from a variety of expertly designed floor plans. Bring it all together at our Lifestyle Design Center. Let Fisher Homes be your new home solution this spring and start making memories at fisherhomes.com.
Tomboy X, the queer-founded clothing line that's inclusive and sustainable. Underwear, swimwear, and more for all bodies. So you can feel good about protecting the goods. Use the code IHEART to get 20% off your first purchase, only at tomboyx.com.
You deserve a moment to yourself every single day. And a delicious bite of a Keebler Sandies can give you that comforting pause. Celebrate the end of your workday with the melt-in-your-mouth magic of a Keebler Sandies. This magic is baked into simple shortbread cookies by Ernie and the Keebler Elves. So as another busy Tuesday flies by, make the most of your me moment. Take a pause and enjoy a Keebler Sandies.